Welcome to the Global Venture and Review podcast. My name's James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief of our Global Corporate Venture, Global University Venture, and Global Impact Venture publications. And it's a great pleasure to be back here once again with Thierry Hillis. Welcome, Thierry. How are you?
I am good. How are you, Jim?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. It's been a good week, actually, in many ways. And it feels like the sun is shining, vaccines are working, give or take, and it's hopefully going to be a good positive year. So what about yourself? Have you had a good week?
Yeah, I've had a fairly productive week. Less sunshine here, although they have just changed restrictions, so I am now allowed to visit one pair of friends in their garden. The summer is almost here, I can feel it.
Well, that's good news indeed. But so what else has been happening? What have been the big stories of the past week?
Well, they are very big stories this week. Actually, I think the smallest investment we're going to cover is $170 million. So it's going to be quite some big numbers. But starting with, well, one element of retail that has emerged unscathed from the pandemic is food, obviously. And Lineage Logistics is among the biggest cold chain services providers in the world, offering temperature controlled delivery and storage. It's now raised $1.9 billion from investors, including property developer Oxford Properties and several real estate investment firms. The equity funding was secured together with a $2.8 billion revolving credit facility and term loan.
Crikey, that is a big old investment, isn't it, in that way? But obviously food, you know, in terms of supply chains has become sort of top of mind for a number of people, not just borders between countries get a bit more challenging, but also climate change puts different stresses on different regions. The whole food and ag sector going through a lot of change as they think about how do you feed potentially 10 billion people by 2050 and how do they actually get the right source of nutrition, and the logistics is a crucial part of that. And increasingly what we're finding is more people are buying things online and having it delivered versus the sort of supermarkets. So it's just changing the fundamentals behind what is ultimately what we all rely on to survive, which is a bit of food. So a lot of changes going on here. There's a lot of stresses as climate change affect things alongside boundaries and borders. But it's good to see that sort of Lineage is certainly going to have the pot of cash to put out more sort of storage centres and the delivery from there to the people who need it.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think I've ever actually been in a supermarket this year yet. I'm not sure when I last went, but I don't think I've been this year. So my habits have definitely changed, and obviously so have a lot of other people's. Another thing that's changed is that we keep riding the highs on the public markets. That's the Dow hits record highs again and again, and the IPO market shows no sign of slowing either. And increasing numbers of international tech companies are flowing to US markets. South Korea-based online marketplace Coupang is the latest to take that option and is floating on the New York Stock Exchange in a $4.55 billion offering. The year's biggest so far, anyway. SoftBank Vision Fund owned more than 39% of its Class A shares pre-IPO, having committed a total of $3 billion in funding.
Yeah, for some context of that 39% share pre-IPO, the company was worth about $63 billion at IPO. So that's a fantastic sort of return for, obviously, SoftBank. Yeah, they might have provided $3 billion in, but if you can get $24 billion or so back, that's probably one of the most fantastic success stories ever. And so Lydia Jett, who's the partner from the Vision Fund, funnily enough, based in California, actually, who did the deal over in Korea, alongside the SoftBank Venture Asia team. She was the nominated for the GCV Rising Stars Award a few years ago now, partly for that deal. And it certainly sort of reaped a lot of dividends for SoftBank, obviously. Who knows what will the aftermarket performance will be and what happens to the share price longer term. But if you could say, one of my deals returned a sort of $20 billion, that puts it into context, some of the independent VCs like Sequoia's big wins, such as WhatsApp, which they sold for about $20 billion to Facebook, which was just this phenomenal return. And obviously, Sequoia didn't own all of that stake, but it was still a whole fund return or more. In this case, it's definitely sort of put Coupang and Lydia on the map. And there's been a lot of focus around e-commerce for obvious reasons, and partly talking about the prior story, Thierry. So a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I can't even imagine that. I mean, that is a stunning return in, $20 billion. Just blows my mind. I've been doing this job for 7 years and it still blows my mind when these things happen. Well, we are staying in Asia. AstraZeneca, which is obviously in the news for a very good reason at the moment, formed the $1 billion healthcare industrial fund in partnership with China International Capital Corporation in late 2019. And now the pharmaceutical firm is teaming up with the investment bank's CICC Capital Unit to establish a 338 million vehicle called WuXi AstraZeneca CICC Investment. AstraZeneca, of course, already runs a life science incubator in the Chinese city of WuXi, and the fund will invest in areas such as innovative therapeutics, medical devices, diagnostics technology, and AI healthcare technology.
Yeah, interesting deal and great collaboration here. You know, funnily enough, I've just come off a webinar moderating a session between the UK and Brazil government on genomics and what are called ATMP, or sort of advanced therapies. And one of their sort of slight laments between the startups who were on that sort of discussion and session was around just the rapid rates of raising, but also the quantum of money that's available, particularly in sort of US and China, which is really sort of enabling their startups to start to outperform and outcompete even sort of good technologies and initiatives in other parts of the world. So, yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting one. Obviously, AstraZeneca, sort of UK, Swedish based, you know, quite well known more recently for having developed with Oxford University the vaccine for COVID-19. But this sort of, they very much view the sort of China and the China partnership as a core part of their future. And no surprise in that regard. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've been quite interested in when you think about these types of deals is how do they think about where the value accretes and lies? You know, I think there's a lot of talk around sovereignty, particularly we're starting to see that with COVID treatments, you know, but I think if you can make it work, then the returns are just fantastic, just given how the aging population in China, alongside its relatively sort of still nascent healthcare system, is a recipe for for potentially fantastic opportunities.
Yeah, very much one to keep a close eye on. Well, the crossover between corporate and university worlds this week is actually an exit. IonQ, which is a US-based quantum computing technology developer exploiting University of Maryland and Duke University research, has agreed to list through a reverse takeover. The company is merging with a SPAC called DMY Technology Group, which had floated on the New York Stock Exchange in a $275 million IPO back in November. The combined business will have a pro forma implied valuation of $2 billion, and the transaction will be supported by $350 million in PIPE financing from investors including Hyundai Motor Company, its Kia subsidiary, and GV, among others. IonQ has created a 32-qubit quantum computer that it claims is the world's most powerful quantum system. It has disclosed a total of just $77 million in funding as of a $55 million round co-led by consumer electronics producer Samsung's Catalyst Fund in late 2019, when Osage University Partners also invested. And if you want to know more about Osage University's strategy of investments, then do head on over to globaluniversityventuring.com, because I talked to Kirsten Leuter for our Talking Tech Transfer podcast last week on that as well.
Yeah, it's a great one. It's a really big sort of potential exit for IonQ. There's a lot of focus and interest around quantum computing. And it's interesting, you could kind of understand why GV is interested in quantum computing, given the sort of importance of computer processing power and developing ideas and technologies for the search engine, among other parts of its business. And the fact that sort of Hyundai coming in through a PIPE or private investment in public equity transaction, as well as its, you know, car subsidiary Kia, is really interesting, just because it shows the potential the number of corporations think about understanding fundamentally things which are much harder to do using sort of ones and zeros or binary. If you can go into qubits, then you could do different types of calculations and modeling in a different way, and that throws up a lot of potentially different optionalities around materials or molecules or how things work, which are much harder or take much longer to solve using sort of more traditional computing methodologies. That's why we see groups like BASF, you know, invest in quantum computing startups, as well as like the UK's intelligence services such as the CIA and a whole host of other different corporations across different fields, because fundamentally things are getting so complex and advanced that if quantum computing can help you solve it faster or sooner than your rivals, then that might be a very much a competitive advantage. So fascinating to see that such a sort of nascent company in some ways in IonQ can go through a public listing through a SPAC at such a high valuation, $2 billion. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the potential rewards are great, but there's a whole host of different quantum companies out there. So it's to go back to your point about the Dow hitting record highs, Thierry, you know, the whole SPACs thing is just that such incredible valuations that it really is hard to comprehend. When a group like Grab could potentially do a $40 billion SPAC as a way of accessing the public markets, it's just mind blown.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite interesting that you said with Hyundai that it might be materials, because my mind went to kind of fleet scale autonomous driving, which would, you know, is going to require vast amounts of computing power to keep cars on the road and keep them safe. But yeah, materials is also one. Yeah. I hadn't really thought of that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, this is why we have these conversations, Jerry, because I hadn't twigged about the autonomous, but of course, yeah, there definitely could be angles on that side. But yeah, I was just coming off it from having talked to BASF, Marcus, and some of the others there about why they were backing quantum deals. And it's very much around the molecules. It's really hard to model or view what will happen to that. So I just went over to materials, actually. But I don't actually know about sort of Hyundai. But yeah, autonomous would make absolute sense.
Yeah. I mean, if we ever get someone from them on the microphone, we can ask them. If they're listening,
yeah,
tell us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, we've always had a pretty good relationship with Hyundai. So attendees and members from, might well reach out on that front. Good thinking. And then obviously we had sort of Alphabet and sort of Capital G and other their corporate venturing unit speak at our last digital forum. So there might be some different angles. Let's explore. But I think those are the main bits. What else have been more news and briefs, Jerry?
Well, we have China-based e-commerce group JD.com, which has, of course, spun off several subsidiaries in recent years, covering areas such as finance, healthcare and logistics. And now its infrastructure investment arm, JD Property, has agreed to raise $700 million in a Series A round co-led by Warburg Pincus and Hillhouse Capital, according to its 2020 end-of-year results. The other investors were not disclosed, but it has partnered sovereign wealth funds GIC and Mubadala on infrastructure funds. Starling Bank is the latest digital bank to pull in a nine-figure amount of funding, taking $377 million in a Series D round, valuing it above $1.5 billion pre-money. Starling, which counts JTC Group among its investors, is one of several well-funded neobanks to spring up in the UK in recent years, including Revolut and Monzo. The sector is still a long way away from proving profitable. Although saying that, Starling has actually been profitable for 4 months now. Despite the current fintech boom, it is going to be interesting to see if they can maintain their growth. Crypto asset manager BlockFi has completed a $350 million Series D round, valuing it at $3 billion, with Hudson River Trading and Susquehanna government products among the participants. Its existing investors include Acuna Capital, SoFi, and corporate venturing vehicles Consensus Ventures, CMT Digital, Recruit Strategic Partners, and SCB10X. And Valo Health is less than 2 years old, but has just closed an upsized Series B round at $300 million, following a $110 million investment by Koch Disruptive Technologies. Valo is one of a new wave of startups allocating machine learning to the drug development process, a wave increasingly looking like it could become the dominant force in early-stage pharmaceutical sector. It's initially targeting cancer and neurodegenerative and cardiovascular diseases. Snyk has secured $300 million as well in a Series E round consisting of primary and secondary investments, with GV, Atlassian Ventures and Salesforce Ventures all contributing. The app cybersecurity technology provider said it has now raised $470 million in primary funding altogether, and the round valued it at $4.7 billion post-money. That's a 47 times increase from the valuation at which GV first invested. And Salesforce Ventures also took part in a $170 million Series C round for Flutterwave, the developer of a cross-border payment platform valuing it at more than $1 billion. It's the latest sign of an ongoing surge in fintech, and the company's earlier backers include MasterCard, Visa, and FIS. It'll allocate the funding to product development and customer acquisition. Funds, we have one more for you here. Ascension Ventures was set up by health system Ascension 2 decades ago, and now the venture capital firm has closed its fifth fund with $285 million in capital supplied by 13 healthcare providers. That's Ascension itself, as well as Advent Health, Carl Foundation, CentraCare, Children's Medical Center of Dallas, Intermountain Healthcare, Novant Health, Ohio Health, OSF Healthcare, Luminous Health, Centara Healthcare, and Texas Health Resources, as well as one unnamed health system. Ascension Ventures has invested in nearly 80 companies to date and now has more than $1 billion in assets under management. Exits, we've got a few more for you here, including SPACs. Of course, game development platform operator Roblox has, however, executed a direct listing on the New York Stock Exchange that gave Tencent and Warner Music Group, or WMG, the chance to sell shares. The direct listing model means there wasn't an official price for the shares, but the New York Stock Exchange issued a guidance price of $45 each, the same price at which Roblox secured $520 million in a WMG-backed round in January that valued it at $29.5 billion, a sevenfold increase in just under a year. As we're recording this on Friday afternoon, UK time, shares are trading at $69.51, which is a slight drop from the $73.90 peak that they briefly reached on Thursday, but obviously still up significantly on the $45. Hypo Enterprises, the online home insurance provider backed by Comcast, Lena, MS&AD, Munich Re and Standard Industries, is the latest company to seek the SPAC route, agreeing to a reverse merger with Reinvent Technology Partners Z. Lena is among the investors to put $550 million of PIPE financing into Hypo, which will come out with $1.2 billion in capital once the deal closes. It lists on the New York Stock Exchange and is expected to have a valuation of $5 billion, and the money should help Hypo reach its goal of being available to 95% of the US population by the end of this year. Olo has developed software that helps restaurants manage online orders and has moved into profit in the past year, as a string of US chains have used its platform to deal with increased online orders during the pandemic. The PayPal-backed company seems to have chosen the right time to go public and has set terms for its initial public offering that will net $324 million if it floats at the top of its range. It is worth mentioning, too, that Olo has disclosed less than $65 million of primary funding pre-IPO. And Coursera, the online education provider spun out of Stanford University and also backed by Caltech and University of Pennsylvania, as well as corporates Seek Group, Laureate Education and Times Internet, is going for the traditional IPO exit. The spin-out is yet to set any terms, having put the customary $100 million placeholder figure into its draft prospectus, but it has collected some $443 million in funding to date. None of the corporates or universities own more than 5% ahead of the offering, and instead Coursera's largest shareholder is NEA with an 18.3% stake. Exonius, developer of a cybersecurity asset management platform, meanwhile, has only just achieved unicorn status, raising $100 million at a $1.2 billion valuation only a few days ago. That's proven the ticket for YL Ventures, a venture firm that has been an investor since seed stage, to divest a $270 million stake to buyers, including the Deutsche Telekom-backed DTCP. Exonius had raised nearly $200 million in primary funding without taking any corporate investment. And finally, some people moves for you as well. Thailand-listed industrials group Siam Cement Group, or SCG, has moved Prakit Foravatanon to managing director of its corporate venture unit, Ad Ventures, and promoted him to director of its corporate innovation office. He was previously director of Deep Tech Innovation at SCG and led its 0-1 startup studio from April 2020, after a 3-year stint running supply chain strategy for SCG Packaging. And Giancarlo Savini has left Shell Ventures, the corporate venturing arm of Shell, and joined Honeywell Ventures, the counterpart for industrial product and software producer Honeywell. Savini told Global Corporate Venturing that he would be, quote, working in a similar role, end quote, at Honeywell Ventures, as he did at Shell Ventures, having joined the latter as Manager of Investment and Partnerships in 2018 from the parent firm. And Katsunori Sago, chief strategy officer for SoftBank will resign at the end of this month, the company has said. Sagot joined SoftBank in 2018 after 3 years as chief investment officer of Japan Post Bank, and he'd previously been an investment banker at Goldman Sachs in Japan. And finally, US-based investment firm ICV Partners has hired Bill Ford, a former executive at beverage producer Coca-Cola Company, as a managing director in its portfolio operations group. Ford had previously spent more than 3 years as director of venturing and portfolio management at Coca-Cola, and before that had been at food processor Treehouse Foods between 2013 and 2017, most recently as general manager of its coffee business unit.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for that, Thierry. And like you say, another busy week, and let's see what the next one brings.
Probably more of the same, Jim, I would guess.
I think you might be right there. All right. Thanks, Thierry.
Thank you, Jim. And that is it for this week's edition of the Global Venturing Review podcast. As always, these are only the top headlines from the past week, so do head on over to globalcorporateventuring.com, globaluniversityventuring.com, and globalimpactventuring.com to find everything else. And of course, do check back daily to stay on top of the news as it happens. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and if this is your first time listening, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, which we really appreciate because it helps us grow our audience. And don't forget to recommend us to your friends and colleagues as well. Maybe even tweet out the episode or post about it on LinkedIn. Keep an eye out too on Wednesdays for our leadership series, where we talk with thought leaders from all over the world to find out more about how they are supporting the innovation ecosystem. If you have any feedback, comments, questions, you can email me at theheles@globaluniversityventuring.com. That's THELES at globaluniversityventuring.com. You can also tweet us at GC Venturing or GU Venturing. My name is Jerry Hillis. My co-host is Editor-in-Chief James Mawson. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from In-Ear Production. Do check him out on inearproduction.com for all your podcasting needs. Our intro music is by Kevin MacLeod under a Creative Commons license. We'll be back with more news next Monday. Have a productive week, everyone. Goodbye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In-Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.